sounds good. Okay. So maybe you could just each of you introduce yourselves, and then I'm going to start by asking Janie and Kay some questions, and then I'm going to ask Chuck some questions. That sounds okay?
Sure. Sure, we can do that.
Okay. So tell me the Janie Heiserote story.
Oh wow.
All right, I'm Janie Heiserote, and I have been, I came in the summer of 75 to do a summer internship
from
the University of Rochester
in
upstate New York. And I worked at Briceville Clinic with Sue Schwier for the summer.
Vaguely remember that name. Do you remember that name?
I remember that name.
Yeah. Yeah, she was, and then she, I went back to finish up my last semester, and Sue left. I'm not sure the reason why. I think she was having a baby. So I accepted the job, and when I came back in January of 76, I worked at Briceville, which didn't last very long, only about 6 months, and then I walked out.
You can say why you walked
quit.
Out.
Stomped out. Stomped out, yeah, I did. There was a little guy named Bird Duncan.
Yeah.
Sure everybody remembers. Yeah. Well, that was why I left.
Ramps.
He got ramp hunting.
Yeah. Right. I think I went with him on some ramp hunts.
So yeah.
He was a character. He really was. So from there, I went to Petros, and I stayed at Petros for 3 or 4 years, and then from there, went with Chuck Castor to Coalfield Clinic. And from there, all kinds of places.
Yeah, so Janie's done a lot of interesting things.
A lot of different things. So. Yeah.
Kay.
Oh, I am Kay Boltmeyer. I got my master's at Vanderbilt, and the reason I ended up here was rather interesting. I graduated in 77, and my best friend, Rebecca Warner, was interviewing for the job with Mountain Peoples. And I said, oh, I'll go along. I've never been over there. And it was a National Health Service course site.
Right.
And so I got there and went to all the interviews with her, and we were just chatting it up, and she said, I don't want that job. I said, well, I do. And that's how that's how I ended up here. And I feel like I had the best of all worlds because I was at the National Health Service Corps. So I was in Stony Fork Mondays and Fridays, but then I was with Dr. Firestone and Dr. Haroff and Dr. Hartman, and we had a full service family practice 3 days, so it was a great blending of both. And I was there 8 years with Valley Health and Stony Fork. And then I was telling Carol earlier, we got a call, Dr. Firestone and I both, that we either had to take over the clinic or be assigned to another site. That the whole reason that they had created these sites was so that practitioners would get out there and then buy the clinic, and neither of us were willing to even think about that. And we certainly didn't want to go to Florida, sorry Rick, but that's where they wanted us to go. And so we both resigned. And I mean, lots of wonderful things happened. I got to work with this wonderful man for a lot of years. I don't know how else, I went to Peace Corps, did lots of wonderful things. So it opened a lot of doors, and it was a great practice. Chuck's story.
My name's Chuck Darling, and I'm a retired physician. I practiced obstetrics and gynecology in Oak Ridge and Knoxville for a number of years. The practice on the basis of my undergraduate education at Yale was oriented toward service, and at a time that East Tennessee was isolated into counties on the basis of the county hospital system that was established after World War II, where the counties were actually competitive and not interactive many times. We tried to make an attempt to expand and ultimately became involved in the regionalization of care in the area and the Primary Care Association. Attended medical school at the University of Michigan and was at the Tulane service in New Orleans for 2 years before the chairman became ill, and I went into the Navy and came back and was completed my residency in Memphis. I undertook to practice with a group of older physicians in Oak Ridge after completing residency, and set up a five-year plan, which seemed popular in Russia, the USSR. And every 5 years, I reviewed my decision to practice in East Tennessee, and found out that I truly was involved in something that was larger than I'd expected. And so I went ahead and renewed my association, really came to enjoy the people and enjoy the work and try to do the best I could do. At the time, we were trying to fuse public health and private care, and I think that's what an association, a team of medical care providers, as it became to be known. A lot of physicians were incensed that they no longer were recognized, particularly as physicians, but but we did better as a team. And it ended up being something that was remarkable. So I joined the board of the Primary Care Association as it was founded. It was had a different name at the time,
right.
and served, and actually was going to fund the organization at one critical time, fortunately didn't have to. I didn't tell my wife.
It was optional.
It was a meaningful experience, and I think that as the organization expanded, I found myself a bit outspoken in terms of personal care, and I retired from the board. The things that were important that I think we tried to emphasize were the nurse practitioner and initially physician team, and as from the Planned Parenthood standpoint, there was a huge concern about population control at the time, and so we were trying to provide sterilization. We found that there was a 80 or 100 to 1 tilt toward female sterilization rather than male vasectomy. There was a big educational problem in the area. We found that the providing services for the births that occurred was terribly important, and that was not a uniform experience. So we extended the county position into the surrounding areas and tried to develop Oak Ridge as a medical center. Unfortunately, that became sensed as competition with Knoxville, and so that interaction is probably still working out.
Okay, thank you. Janie went to the University of Rochester to get her nurse practitioner training. Was it an MSN?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Kay went to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And those two, particularly Rochester, were sort of in the vanguard of developing the whole concept of nurse practitioners.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Loretta Ford was the dean.
Yes.
She was started the first programs.
Yep. And I guess I'm interested in why both of you were. Did you go to the same nursing school?
Heck no.
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 Oh, okay.
No, we both went to Valparaiso University, but Kay was in social work.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I thought you were.
And I didn't know her.
No, we didn't know each other. But there were a few couple years difference, I guess.
Right. Okay.
Didn't meet.
So, so why did you decide you wanted to be nurse practitioners?
Stan being a nurse. nurse in a hospital. That was either get out of nursing or do something a little more with a little more independence and
right.
See, I wasn't near as bullheaded. Mine was I was in social work, and my first job was working at a state institution with severe and profoundly, at that point we said retarded, we don't say that anymore. And I realized that all the people I met had needs for health care, for housing, for food, and I could give words, but I couldn't provide any of that. And that's when I went to Cornell to get my nursing, because they had a 2+2. You had your bachelor's, you could go get that. And then when I came back to, I was in Indiana at that time, I worked at a community clinic providing family planning, exactly, and also worked at the hospital. And very quickly, some of the people I worked with there said, you should go be a nurse practitioner. And that's when I started applying. So it evolved the way it was supposed to, I think. I didn't hate the hospital as much as she did, but it wasn't my niche.
Uh-huh.
And then it was just good. I mean, so it wasn't something I woke up when I was 5 or something. No.
That's probably a good thing. So you voluntarily joined the National Health Service Corps? Or were you working off
you
any kind of scholarship?
Yeah, I was National Health Service Corps, but I didn't join.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how it worked out.
Okay.
So. And so we didn't. I didn't have a loan from them or anything, did you?
No.
No, oh, okay. I did it after graduation, whereas the physicians I worked with, they had loans they were paying off or whatever, so many years of service for...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Jane, did you run into any of the Nashville, the Mandeville people, Mandeville nursing students at Rochester?
No. Well, maybe I did.
I mean, Rosie Hammond was in school there.
Diane Oliver
was in school there.
I don't remember those names. The instructor that was the connection was named Leah, and I
can't.
Leah. There you go. I couldn't think of her last name.
Okay.
But she was the person who directed me to Tennessee for that summer internship.
Mm-hmm. Was Leah at Rochester?
Yeah.
Yes.
She was.
She?
Yeah, she was one of my instructors.
Okay.
So that was the connection down
what
here.
What years were you at Rochester?
Oh, let me think. 74, 75.
Oh, yes. That would have been early.
That was before Diane went.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
It's okay. Were you in the Primex program?
No, the Primex was, who was it that we worked with that was Primex? It's Ann?
Yeah, Ann.
But no, I was in the master's program.
And who was the faculty involved in that?
I'm sorry, respectfully, I don't remember.
Well, was Virginia George involved in
this? Yeah, I knew Virginia. She was the head.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, she
what
was
about
lovely.
Ingeborg Mausch.
Oh, she came. She was a visiting professor.
Oh, okay.
No, she was a distinguished chair.
Was she there at that?
Yes, and she would do Sunday fireside chats.
Did
with
you
all
go?
Oh, it was wonderful.
I bet.
If there was anybody who was wonderful,
Ingeborg
was her.
She was. I used to go to conferences every year just to listen to Ingeborg. She would inspire
she
me and get
we were,
me through
we were
another
good
year.
In Nashville.
Oh, she was wonderful.
She was
yeah. Her husband, Hans, was a sociology professor at the University of Missouri when I was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know whether they, I guess they were divorced, but they were kind of like an institution, the two of them.
Yeah.
In terms of,
yeah.
And he, most of his work was about rural health.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you decided to start your NP practice in East Tennessee. And you kind of said,
I've always believed doors open when they're supposed
to.
Yeah,
there you go.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's been my life experience, but maybe not yours. But
well,
and he'd been sent here for an internship, so that's kind of how you got the
connection. And then just came back and took the job, so I don't remember. I guess I had nowhere else to go, so why not Tennessee? I don't know.
I was planning to go to Michigan. I was going to work in rural Michigan before I came over here with Rebecca.
Uh-huh.
That was my dream, but it's all good.
You don't regret being
okay.
in Tennessee. Good, good. So did you feel that you were prepared for the kind of practice you had to do in Stony Fork and Petros?
Sure. I mean, I didn't know enough to know that I wasn't prepared. I think
it's like now
just,
you know.
You just did it. Right? When I think about some of the stuff we did, I'm just amazed. But I don't remember having any real concerns about it. We just dealt with things as they came in.
Right.
There was always the phone, you know, if you needed some
you could
help
call Rick
assistance,
or assistance.
Yeah,
call Alan.
Whoever, send people to Oak Ridge. But that didn't seem to happen very often.
No.
Most of the stuff was pretty straightforward, pretty simple, pretty much so. No, of course, medicine, everything was so much simpler.
Right.
You know, just wasn't as complicated. And we didn't have that many medications. We didn't have, the technology wasn't there for things. One thing I remember that I kind of wonder at now is that we had incubators and centrifuges, and we plated out our own cultures.
Oh, yeah, we do.
And
and
did our own blood smears.
Yeah,
and sensitivities. We did our blood smears. We did, we autoclaved our instruments.
Right.
It was all just part of daily life. And, you know, nowadays, nobody does that stuff. Nobody.
Right. Well, I think, and it's something I've observed for a long time, that patients are so extremely smart to know where they should go. Like if they're bleeding profusely, they knew not to come there.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I got put in situations that things were too extreme or difficult for me to handle because patients knew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think sometimes we underrate them in terms of what they know about where they need to be. And so for handling regular just health issues, I didn't feel. Then we had people like this lovely man always available, you could call and
all day and night,
and so it wasn't I mean, that's all you need some resources when you got to get somebody in fast.
That's right. So both of you were the third nurse practitioner at your site.
I know there was a Kathy.
Well, it was Kathy Bowman, and before her was Pat Karpinski at Stony Fork. And then you had Wanda.
Wanda, yeah, and then...
whom I met in Nashville.
I didn't realize there was another one. Okay.
And Lucy Freitag.
Yeah. Oh, Lucy was there.
Yeah.
Did
she really?
No, I'm talking about Petros.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. I had a student.
And
I'm
scared. So... to some extent, there was familiarity with the concept of nurse practitioners by the time you got there. But did you have any issues with people wondering who the heck you were, or
No. Did
they all call you doctor? Or?
They didn't. I don't remember what they called us.
Yeah.
Probably Janie.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, I really don't recall people getting upset about not seeing a physician.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really talk about titles. It was
somebody
to provide some care.
Yeah.
Same I don't remember that being an issue. That would have been more an issue when we were in practice together.
Yeah.
But they had a choice of who they wanted to see. I mean, it's not like they were forced.
They called me Mr. sometimes if they did. It was fine.
Yeah, whatever.
But I think I just keep saying patients are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. To know who they should be with and what. That's how I feel about it. And for both of us, there were physicians there on other days. If they really wanted to see the physician, they'd come in that day.
Right.
That's right.
Because the setup at Mountain Peoples was that there was one National Health Service Corps physician, Rick was the first, and they would circuit ride among the three clinics. And I think Rick said you spent roughly one and a half days each at each place.
Yeah, that would have been about right.
And you could call if something came up between.
Or have them come back 2 days later and see the doc. He'll be here and make sure what's going on with you.
So, just out of curiosity, and with due deference, do you recall what the issue was that you had with Burr Duncan?
Oh, yes.
No doubt.
Oh, yes. You know, they had these little boards that, community boards, and they were all his relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And he Well, let's see, one thing was he had all the mail delivered to his house, and that's back in the days when all the pap smears and blood reports came through the mail. So he would have them, and he wouldn't give them to me.
Oh,
and I'd have to kind of beg or finagle or somehow get him to send me the reports I needed. Every Wednesday afternoon, all the nurse practitioners in the area would meet for a little continuing education kind of thing. Well, he was paying me to work, not to go to school, so that was out. And what was the other? Oh, there were all. Oh, and then the lady who cleaned the clinic was one of his relatives, so she would come in and clean, and also kind of peruse the charts, and then call people to talk about whatever they were being seen for.
HIPAA
violation. So those were things
before HIPAA.
So it was just things like that. Yeah. And there was nothing I could do about it except complain. And there was one board meeting, the last board meeting, I was complaining about something along those lines. And he said, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, I'm going to quit. When are you going to do that? Right now. To my person out the door. So that's how that ended. And he was, well, you all remember Bird. Did you ever meet Bird?
Yes.
He was about 4 feet tall and had a third grade education. Worked with a spit cup. And everybody loved him. He was such a character.
He was
impossible to work with. That was the downside of a community.
Right.
Boards. But
did you have any, you didn't have that much interaction with the board.
It was Otis and, it was all his family, but there wasn't really...
You didn't have that kind of nonsense, did you?
I mean, Shelby probably knew everything in every chart because she worked there, but she had a lot of discretion, so I...
And so did you all, did Margaret Ecker work up here while you were there?
She was here when I came.
She worked at Brightstuff.
Did she? Yeah, before. Yeah, or maybe while I was there, or just before I was there.
Okay,
but I. Yeah,
and she when I came, she was actually working up in Clearfield. And then she eventually left. I don't know whether she ever had a place where she was kind of the full-time expecting her to be there for a long time person. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
So, and then, as long as we're talking about dealing with community boards, Janie also had some conflicts in Petros.
Oh, yes.
She's trouble. I think.
I am.
I realize that now.
And she walks out.
I walked out of the pattern. Yes.
Well, at some point, Mountain Peoples had two physicians who were willing to come. One of them was Bob Hartman, and the other was this physician, Chet Castor, who was a Catholic brother.
Brother, father.
Right. Dr. Brother Castor. And so Petros said, we'll take him. And actually, some of the other people at Mountain Peoples weren't sure about this Catholic brother thing. Mm-hmm. So
took him over Hartman?
Yeah, they did.
It was a better fit.
In
reality, it was a better fit. Uh-huh.
And so Hartman went to Stony Fork and Norma, and then I got him hooked up with the practice in Jacksboro,
right,
so that he spent some time there as well. Chet was had done a residency in family medicine and really wanted to deliver babies, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of almost a dream come true at that point.
He's just a sweet guy.
Yeah, he is a sweet guy. So what happened?
He walked out.
Oh no. I walked out that time.
It was a long time before.
Yeah, it was a long time. Chet and I worked together for quite some time. And I think the issue was actually between him and the board.
Right.
And he wanted to move out on his own, I suppose, was the crux of it. So he built a clinic in Coalfield, got someone to give him some land and some money,
and he had that big
build a clinic. And I went with him rather than stay at Petros.
Hadn't there been a conflict with the board about they didn't think you should provide contraception to unmarried women or something like that?
I don't recall that. Might have been, though. That's real possible.
I think that happened in my time.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe that was one of the issues. I don't remember.
Right.
But again, it was, you know, with all the local people and the local board, you know, sometimes folks wouldn't show up to work and you just didn't know what was going on. I don't know. It was probably a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We went to Coalfield and stayed there for a few years. And
how many years were you there?
You know, I'm not sure, but it must have been 5 or 6 years.
And that's when they removed Chet, right? The brother, or he left the brother?
He left, yeah.
And he eventually ended up with his partner, now husband, in...
He's in New York.
He's in upstate New York.
He was
Albany.
In Schenectady.
Or Schenectady?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's working with...
So he went through his own transitions.
Yes, he did. And that's what happened to Coalfield, but that wasn't part of Mountain
Peoples.
Right.
That
was, that was something entirely different. Right. But it was something, you know, Petros and Coalfield both, Chet and I worked very well together.
Yeah, you guys did.
And it was an interesting practice because we did everything from, he delivered babies.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did the prenatal care, the deliveries, and I often went along just to support, labor support kind of thing. And then we did the well child care and the postpartum care and the contraceptive care. And at the same time, we're treating the grandmother's high blood pressure and the grandpa's this. And we knew their neighbors and we went out to their houses and... You know,
we thought it should be.
Yeah, it really was a family practice, and a community practice. We knew everybody, and they knew us, and there was that give and take. We literally would go and have meals with people in the community, or you'd take a break from seeing patients and run out and do a home visit. Or,
right.
I remember getting a call in the middle of the night once, like 3 a.m. and I live in Oak Ridge, from a family whose father was dying, and he was in terrible pain. And I got in my little Honda at 3 in the morning and drove out to Morgan County, let myself in the clinic, probably it was Demerol, maybe morphine, I don't know, you know, locked up in whatever we had it locked up in, and drove out way out in the country in this little roads and got to this little house way out there, and there were all the lights on and cars all around, and the whole family was gathered, and went in and checked him out, gave him whatever it was I had, and went on home. And he died the next morning when I went back out. I checked on him. You know, for years I'd run into people. They'd come in to see me at other practices in Oak Ridge and Knoxville, and they'd say, oh, you came out and took care of Miller Jones. You were the one who... You know, it was an incredible connection with the community and who we were. And, you know, I never felt unsafe.
Uh-huh.
I was the nurse, and nobody was going to hurt the nurse because they I think the whole county knew who we were. And the same with Chet. You know, we could move around and do things that you wouldn't think about doing today. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
So when you and Dr. Castor moved to Coalfield, Did the Petros patients follow you there?
Yeah, a lot of them did.
Okay.
A lot of them did. They had a little trouble after that, I think, keeping things going. You were gone by then, I think.
I was gone by then, but I heard that Mountain Peoples did place either a PA.
It was
or
a PA,
PA,
and I
remember
her.
But not for long?
She didn't stay long. She had some difficulties, too. And then the clinic burned down or something. So it was.
Okay.
So yes, those patients followed us.
Yeah, and that would make sense to me.
Yeah, but you didn't have the same sense of community connection at Petros as you had at Coalfield?
No, it was the same.
It was the same.
Yeah, it really was.
It was a type of thing where if somebody didn't come in for a prenatal appointment for a couple times, the nurse practitioners would notify the family and they'd round the person up.
Or you'd go out and visit them.
Yeah.
You'd get in the car and you'd go see them.
Yeah.
It's a very different sense of things then as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But also the communities were isolated, so there was a sense of community where everybody knew each other and knew if somebody wasn't quite
Yes.
I mean, I can remember going out to someone's still that was way on it, and no one, and walking wait with Kathy Daugherty, and because he couldn't come, he was afraid and too paranoid to come to the clinic, and we'd go way out there. But everybody knew that. I mean, I think about, I had a brother who was schizophrenic, and he could have lived up there, because you could be a little bit off the grid and exist, because everyone watched out for you to a degree, you know? They weren't going to let you starve on the street. They, you know, so, I don't know. It's just, but I don't think it probably exists the same way even in Stony Fork now, because there's no way it can. It does. I guess the church is still there, but beyond that, there's really no core to bring them together.
Right.
It was a different world.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of poverty.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a poverty of community or a poverty of spirit or a poverty I don't know how to describe it, but it was so different. They had a lot more then than they have now. Mm-hmm. And I see a real deterioration in the conditions of some of these county communities, rural communities.
Well, there was a lot of money put into rural Appalachia, right, before we came. I mean, that was big. That's why Rural Legal Services came. I mean, there was a lot of money, nutrition programs,
right?
Black Lung, all that was, you know, you think about everybody we would play volleyball with, they were all there with some kind of grant money coming from somewhere else. They weren't making their living in the city.
There were stories from the origins of Planned Parenthood and regarding PTRAS that sort of showed that it was a conservative community. They went out in the late 1960s to talk about contraception, and there was a little shelter that you could sit in waiting for a train to pass on the railway tracks entering the town, and at that time, the men kept their rifles or shotguns across the back window of their pickup trucks, and the ladies found that there were a lot of trucks parked across the road and a lot of men standing around, suggesting that maybe their wives didn't need their services that day.
Oh, wow.
And they made the mistake of hiring an African-American to further their family planning program and talk about sterilization and contraception door to door in Morgan County, and he didn't maintain the job very long.
No, I'm sure.
So I'm just curious, and maybe Carol, you can remember this. So when the clinic was functioning at PTRAS, were patients coming into PTRAS from places like Coalfield and Wartburg? I guess the question is, was there a differentiation as far as patient mix when you moved out to Coalfield, or was it basically the same?
Same.
Okay, same. Interesting.
We saw, when I was at PTRAS, we saw a lot of people from New River, which was over the mountain, you know, and the surrounding communities. We didn't see a lot of people from Wartburg and north of there, but Coalfield and PTRAS are fairly close together, and I think that the mix was pretty much similar.
So Chuck, how did you get connected to Mountain Peoples to be our Dr. Darling? In more ways than
that. I've mentioned there was a huge amount of interest in population control, and the question was, how can one work within the social framework that exists to further legitimate medical goals? And it became apparent that a lot of people in Oak Ridge had been very directive, and that was not well received when they went out into the counties. And it was much more important to work with people to help them to understand issues than it was to tell them what the issues were. So there was a lot of lay midwifery at the time, and that is dangerous. And yet those people needed an outlet that they could, where there was an element of trust, and there wasn't much trust with the medical system that existed. So until the insurance companies told me that I couldn't do it, basically I was an outlet for those people as they gradually disappeared. I mean, we helped them to disappear. And
the lay midwives.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the same was true of just basic things like pap smears. We had daughters bringing their mothers in, and you could hear them in the waiting room say, "I ain't gonna let no male doctor into my privates." And so it was very important to have a nurse practitioner available to assist in those mm-hmm. issues. Mm-hmm. But people needed pap smears with some frequency. So I was sort of overwhelmed by the needs, I guess, that I was confronting, and started investing in trying to resolve what I could.
But I mean, the follow-up, so was your initial, introduction to Mountain Peoples through your Planned Parenthood, wearing your Planned Parenthood hat?
I think that you tried to have cooperative meetings, and we met at Rick's place. We met periodically because I think we were all busy, but it was enough to establish some type of an interaction and bond, and it was the early form of regionalization, actually, mm-hmm. trying to reach out into areas that were terribly underserved at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly at the time that I was here, out in the counties, there were GPs who weren't too thrilled about the clinics or the whole idea of nurse practitioners. But I would assume that at that time also, there were a lot of physicians in Oak Ridge who weren't particularly interested in working with nurse practitioners. Is that a fair statement or no?
There was confusion about the roles of a nurse practitioner. Yeah. And about there still is confusion about the role of nurse midwifery, which we also tried to sponsor at one time. So the politics weren't as important as getting care patterns established, from my perspective, and in discussing politics with a friend with whom I was playing tennis, he said, as we changed sides of the court, he said offhand, "Well, were there people there in politics?" And that caught me off guard, and I started thinking about that, and you know, missed the next 2 points. Because it's true, and I was perhaps so politically insensitive that it didn't make any difference, ultimately.
Uh-huh.
I think he was one of the few physicians that was willing, that was local, that mm-hmm. was willing to stand up and put yourself on the line, if we're really honest.
Yeah.
Because the rest of us came in from all over. Mm-hmm. None of us had been there or shown. We were dedicated to we were all like the other programs coming through. So in my memory, that was vital because everyone knew, at least that I know, that we could count on you.
Yes.
And I think that made a tremendous difference. I know it did for us being able to give OB care in La Follette. If we hadn't had that, and your partners were not necessarily as interested as you.
No, they weren't.
And so, I mean, you were really, in my opinion, willing to put yourself on the line a lot of times for something much bigger than you.
Yeah, you were. And you didn't, when somebody came in from a, you know, like a lay midwife or home birth or something, there was a complication. He didn't question or blame or anything else. He just said, "Okay, how can I help?"
And he
did it without making anybody feel bad. Or it was just a seamless kind of movement from...
But there weren't a lot of peers standing beside you.
No, there were not. There were not.
I really don't remember.
My next
door neighbor said that we moved into the house and we got together a couple times and they thought we were nice people and then I vanished.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
I think he's still nice. We think he's alive.
Yeah.
What was the story you just told me about getting a call from Firestone?
Who was doing
deliveries in Campbell County and had no training in obstetrics. Hadn't done a residency yet.
The one who said he was delivering a breach.
And so what happened?
It's the middle of the night and he's tracked me down. I think I was in the hospital and he said, there's no way this lady can get to Oak Ridge. She's delivering a breach and we're in the delivery room right now. And I have the textbook for obstetrics open beside me.
Is that right?
What is the position? Well, it's a frank breach we've established. It wasn't foot down. And okay, well, how are things coming along? Well, she's beginning to push a little bit good. And so we got the buttocks delivered, and then we'll check on the shoulders.
And you're doing all this over the phone.
Yeah, so we're doing this on the phone. I sort of pictured him like this, sort of check and see how things are going.
It was.
But the point was that you were there for him to call, probably wasn't anybody else he could have called to do that.
That's right.
Well, at least maybe not gotten the same response.
That's right.
Yeah, depending who's on call.
Well, I'm always amused these days when, like, some of my students will talk to me about, you know, oh, this great new idea about nurse practitioners. And I'll say, let me inform you.
It's not that new.
It's not that new. And, you know, it's surprising even today how many people don't understand the role of nurse practitioners and, you know, and what they're able to do. But how do you think clinical care today is different from when you were practicing?
No. You don't get us started.
No. She might have to leave again.
I might have to leave.
You can walk out again.
don't rile her up.
That's right.
Well, obviously there's the opioid epidemic, which was not an issue when you were here.
There were always addictive issues, but not to the same extent.
Yeah.
The problem that I see is that nicotine's addictive, and there are 468,000 deaths a year related to tobacco, and I'm told that there are 64,000 deaths last year related to opioids. So I'm afraid the tobacco industry is enjoying the diversion of attention. I think that we have a problem that we need to deal with, but some of it's the hollowing out of the middle class that we've seen in the last 35 years. If I were in the bottom 5% of income, my absolute wages in 2010 dollars would have declined 27%. If I were at a 50% at the 50th percentile, my absolute wages would have declined 17%. That's the tremendous social problem that we're not confronting very well right now.
Yeah.
That influences medical care, and I think it leaves people hopeless and on opioids because we don't have very many mystics. I think if we could teach mysticism in the school,
we could further.
Yeah, you could avoid the drugs. Yeah.
Can I go back for 1 second, Sir Chang? Did you and Dr. Castor leave Coldfield together?
Or? No, I left.
You left first.
I left, and then he left after that.
And how long after that did he leave?
It was a year or two after that, and then he
And so
he left.
After he left, Did anyone move into
COVID? Well, it's been opened and closed and opened and closed. The building is still there, as far as I know, and occasionally there's a sign saying the clinic is open. I think Harriman Hospital or some other people will open it periodically for a little while, but no, there's been no consistent.
I think the whole thing that happened here and everywhere with we people who think we know the answers mm-hmm. for areas, we come in and do our little piece mm-hmm. and then we leave, and we do our little piece and then we leave, and we're certainly doing it in developing countries too. We go do our little piece, we get this great idea, why don't you do that?
Yeah.
And I think what saved both of our communities is we both stayed a long time. Mm-hmm. And Chet stayed a long time, and Dr. Firestone stayed a long time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the trust grew. Mm-hmm. But again, even though you were hiring local people, once we left, it ended.
It ended.
And I don't know where the lesson is from that, but it's probably empowering the locals to do it rather than you.
Well, the lesson on that is sort of what we saw yesterday.
Yes, right. That's what Carol was telling us, that local people are...
Right.
Where, one of the most, I think, impressive things to me was the whole notion that, half the county goes to that facility, or those facilities, and it's across income ranges. Right. Not everybody, it's still primarily low income, but they were very proud of the fact that, they don't turn anybody away.
Yeah.
And, sort of... We're somewhat critical in a very kind way, to the private practitioner who, basically only wants to, only see you if you can pay, pay the bill. So they sort of recognize that, and I see that in Nashville where the community health centers are sort of rebranding themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of United Neighborhood Health Service, it's now Neighborhood Health with a very catchy logo.
Yeah.
Instead of University Community Health Service, it's Connect Us. So it's a different kind of branding where they're sort of recognizing that they really need to go beyond just becoming known or being known as the low income facility and really open themselves up to more mixed patient base.
Yeah.
Well, and I would say both of our clinics weren't really aimed just at the poor.
They were.
So that wasn't really it had a sliding fee scale, but that really
wasn't the
variable that we're going to put you. Well, I don't know if you put it there because, they didn't have health care. I'm sure that's why it was put there.
So the next question was, were you there when the Morgan County Health Council entity developed?
Yes.
Okay, so where did that come from?
That was up around Wartburg. And
And they had National Health Service Corps of Physicians.
They did.
Was that initially National Health Service Corps?
Yes.
And then, because at some point in time, that morphed into an FQHC.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was...
And that's still there.
Yeah,
is that still, right?
I think so. Yeah. Wartburg and
Deer
Lodge.
Do you have any relationship with them, Dr. Dorn?
I was interactive with their physicians, but I was not administratively active with the council.
Well,
I'm going to answer your question.
Good.
About the evolution of nurse practitioners. To me, and I've been very involved in teaching them too, so I'm slightly disappointed. I think they're losing... through the education process and our economic system, they're losing some of the total patient emphasis, mm-hmm. and they're subspecializing just like the physicians did. Mm-hmm. And whether that's the need or certainly the subspecialists are grabbing them.
Yep.
But it is not the emphasis on total patient care and really expanding the service provided. It's more a mimic. To me, it's more mini doc now than it ever was.
I agree.
I didn't think I was ever a mini doc. I was there to give total patient care, and I didn't pretend I knew everything Chuck
knew. Right.
And I couldn't even begin. I knew this much of what he knew. But I was aware of that difference.
Yep.
Where I think now, the emphasis is, oh, sure, you're just the same. You can... That right. really isn't true, and it's a disservice to the patients, and it's disservice to you as the provider, I think. And so they want more money.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a big emphasis toward doctorate in nursing practice, because if it says doctorate, then you have a clinical doctorate, so that's equal to doctorate in medicine. To me, it's getting really mucky and not necessarily aimed at filling the gap in care that we were created for. That's my opinion.
I agree with you.
And you were telling me...
Yes.
Screw, so she's not going to walk out.
She's not going to walk out on this one.
No, I'm sticking around.
But the other thing that you were saying to me the other day about the difference between, you know, trying to sell stuff.
I just remember back when we would have someone come in to see us. We'd say, well, what does this person need, and how can we find it for them or provide it for them? And sometimes it took some creativity. And now it's just, what can we sell them? Well, how can we get them to buy into this or that? It's just a different attitude toward healthcare, and that healthcare has become a huge business, and it's all about money. It's all about tests and drugs right now. My primary connection with healthcare nowadays is taking my parents, who are in closing in on 90, to their doctor visits and sitting in the emergency rooms with them. They don't get touched. Nobody touches them.
Now
I don't see anybody.
The lab test.
They do the lab test. They order stuff, and I'm thinking, did you ever listen to his lungs? Did you talk to them about this or that? There's no history taking. It's all about tests and drugs.
And things are fast.
They only have a few minutes.
You've got to crank them out.
That's it. It's all so very different. Mm-hmm. And good healthcare is slow healthcare, in my opinion.
You know, what's interesting from an educational standpoint, because I taught medical students for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
And chaired the curriculum committee in Florida for 12 years, is that the physical assessment skills and physical diagnosis courses are really no different than they used to be.
Is that right?
They use more technology.
But they're taught how to touch and listen.
They're taught that. It's the system that drives that out of them. And we've spent a long time trying to, to determine what to do about that. And you find it starting during residency.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, when they're... You know, they've got too many patients to see, and they don't have much time.
Yeah.
And why should I listen to your heart when I can get an echo?
That's exactly the problem.
Instead of hearing a murmur and wondering what it is, I can just get an echo.
I think that is exactly what's going on.
The diagnostic skills have disappeared, but it's not because they're not being taught.
Okay.
But I don't know if they have as much power because of all the legal suits that happen as if they had the test that said, no, you didn't have that.
There's a lot of CYA involved.
Sure there is.
Especially in emergency rooms.
Right.
Yeah. The other part of how things have changed is, fragmentation, but with computers, it's checking boxes. And you can't tell a story by checking boxes. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved the story. Mm-hmm. And I remember writing my notes, or whether I was dictating or writing. I remember back in the day.
That's why
Bert
was reading your notes.
I guess so. But I was telling a story.
Yes.
And I can't tell that story by checking boxes on a computer. And I know it's more efficient, and I know all the reasons why, but it changes everything.
Yeah, and you can't follow up on that story next time because you can't even leave
you
yourself.
You don't even know what the story is.
I remember you were great at leaving little cryptic notes.
Yes.
At the bottom of a chart, you would write something like this to remind you of something that had happened. It would be
something particular about that patient and this needed to be. And it may not even be.
Stories are what make communities.
That's right.
And I worked in a free clinic, which was computerized, and I had to learn how to use computers, and I'm still trying to learn.
Yeah.
But they were using the SOAP system.
Yeah.
I found, first, that a lot of the boxes weren't filled in. Uh-huh. Second, that they had no family history.
They had no way
to put this person in a socioeconomic environment in the midst of a community and a family to know who that person might be.
That's right.
And and it was very perfunctory, and that combined with information I found recently that out of 6,500 hospitals in the country, only 5% have CEOs with any medical experience.
Right. It's business.
And the cost
business.
Increases come through administrative costs up 30 times from where they were when we were mm-hmm. working together.
Wow.
So it's not trying to integrate medical care with individual people
it's business.
In the same way that we were trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're talking about a perfect storm of changes in payment and medical records, record technology, and organizational structure, and they're all just basically combining. And I've decided that you and my wife should not get together and talk.
We both want heads roll.
Or if you do, I'm going to leave the room.
Okay.
Jean is a surgeon.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
And I think she would share with you your observations on electronic medical records.
I think everybody is beginning to share it. And now it's gotten so far that because you have to inform, but the patient has to go to their portal. It's such a mess right now. I find that just appalling, but they've got to show that they have put it on the portal, and it's your fault if you didn't read it.
Yeah. Right.
You're the bad one. Yep. It's really...
I have to say that one of my big issues as a academic was trying to understand why the U.S. system is so expensive. Yeah. And I think a lot of it is what Janie was talking about, which is it's not just having CEOs who don't know anything about healthcare, although I actually, that is a thing that I consider to be very important, mm-hmm. But that we're selling people stuff. I live in Philadelphia, the ads on TV for the hospitals... The University of Pennsylvania, which is supposed to be a premier institution, has advertisements with testimonials by patients, cancer patients, who've gotten proton beam therapy. Mm-hmm. And that's only been proven to be more effective than traditional therapy for a small number of pediatric cancers.
Right.
And yet, you'd think it had... And so these patients are on there saying, you know, I had proton beam therapy to save my life, and you should come to Penn. There's an awful lot of unnecessary utilization because of promotion, including advertising for drugs. Yeah.
The drugs annoys me more than that. Because a patient's not going to go in and tell you what kind of radiation they might say, I heard that.
Yeah.
But as far as a medicine, they'll come in and say, I want that pill.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, there's been a fundamental change in academic health centers.
Yeah.
From the time I was a medical student and a resident at Vanderbilt, when the vast majority of faculty taught, did research, mm-hmm. and saw patients. The goal of a medical school was not to be a cost center.
Right.
It was to teach people and to take care of patients.
Right.
My clinic was largely... you know, lower income people. And since I've been in academics now for most of my career, I've seen it gradually change to where faculty all of a sudden were no longer, you know, were suddenly divided into two groups, those that did research and those that brought in the dollars, and doing away with tenure track and hiring people on contracts instead of on tenure.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it is a business. It was not a business. And not only, I think, has that been bad for medical education, for the reasons that you're talking about, where students are taught to look at the computer screen. We actually, in teaching early students, we actually work into the curriculum how you can maintain eye contact while still entering.
Yeah.
I mean,
look up every 5 seconds.
You know, I never thought that was something that we would have to do.
Sort of like touch typing.
But it's been a fundamental change
huge.
in in how people are trained. And one of the groups that suffered really have been low-income people.
Yeah.
Because our clinics in Nashville, at, even at Vanderbilt, but especially at the Nashville General, VA clinics, those clinics were never set up to collect massive amounts of money, and lots of patients were never charged.
Yeah.
And we provided care for a lot of people that couldn't get in the door now.
Yeah.
And I think that's harmed civic engagement of hospitals with the community in some cases. It's interfered with the educational process, and it's left a lot of people without a source of care.
I think you're right.
And a lot of providers who don't even want to be involved in care anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, the number that don't even want to do it anymore is phenomenal, because it has lost some of what we loved about it.
All of that.
And it certainly is no fun being a patient, I'll tell you that. Yeah, I mean, you're just fodder going through the system. And they're not disrespectful, but they're not really very interested.
They're not engaged. That's it. They're not. They just want to get you through so they can get to the next one.
I mean,
yeah.
Is that how you've seen things change, Chuck?
I tried not to change with things. And so before I retired, I guess it's been about 5 years now, I was still attempting to do what needed to be done, but all the incentives are directed toward not doing this individualization of care right now, and perhaps we need to find a way to make that profitable and in order to sell it again. But I think there's a huge public demand for that kind of care if it's available.
Yeah. I think there is.
I sense that we've, in our effort to combine public health and individualized care, that we've failed, and we've sort of gone to the public health model, and it's reminiscent of training days at Charity Hospital in New Orleans, where we'd see 30 new obstetric patients, and they'd be seated in gowns for examination on either side of a hallway, and you'd pull out the ones with swollen legs first because they might be in danger.
Oh, wow.
And that it was a crude screening technique. That getting away from that system was a great move from my point of view. And I feel like we're falling back in that direction.
Yeah, I think we are.
Well, what a great discussion this has been. I'm just so...
You can keep talking.
Okay. I know that Kay has to go, but I would still like to talk to Chuck and Janie a little bit longer.
Let's keep chatting.
If that's okay. Thank you so much for doing this. I absolutely think this is a very important piece of what came from the Student Health Coalition, and I really think this is going to be a valuable part of the